and welcome to a special Markhive summary episode of Octopod, the Octo Podcast. I'm Nick Wehner, Director of Open Initiatives at Octo, and Project Director for the Markhive Archive of Ocean Conservation and Marine Climate Change Research. Thank you for listening. In this episode, I'll be interviewing Mirta Zupan and Emmanuel Gonsalves, who are both authors on the paper Drivers of Ecological Effectiveness in Marine Partially Protected Areas, which is available to read for free in the Markhive Archive at marxiv.org. Without further ado, let's jump into the interview.
I'm Mirta Zupan. While I was doing this work about the paper, I was part of, it was my master's thesis that I've done with ISPA University in Lisbon, Portugal.
I'm Emmanuel Gonsalves. I'm an associate professor at ISPA and MARE in Lisbon, Portugal. And I'm also a member of the Oceano Azul Foundation.
Could you just give me like a quick kind of like, you know, elevator pitch, just kind of describing what you all did for this, and especially developing the database that you did all your analysis in?
This study came from a project that we had with different partners that explored the question of how effective are partial protected areas. There's a lot of scientific literature on no-take zones that show the benefits, the ecological benefits of no-take zones, but everything else is lumped into a category called partial protection. And we wanted to know if there were differences between the different types of partial protection and if we could come up with an analysis about what works and what doesn't work when you start increasing activities inside a marine protected area. And so there was no global analysis about this topic on how the regulations of a partial protected area affect the ecological benefits that that area produces. So the overall driver of this project was trying to come up with an analysis that could support the differentiation of the different areas that have a wide range of different regulations and sort them in areas with different effectiveness associated to these regulations. And before this analysis, it was essential to have a classification system that is sensitive to these differences in the regulations in partial protection. And this was a different study where we also participate that created a classification system for no-take and partial protection. We call it a regulation-based classification system. That was also the basis for this analysis.
To answer these questions, we needed to look for data and what is available. So we have done like an extensive systematic review of the literature, of only published literature though, that reported any kind of responses within partially protected areas, comparing them to the outside unprotected areas, how we call them. So the database was built based on previous works of databases that we found, and then we also searched for most recent literature. And this took the longest amount of time because there's not so much papers published on partially protected areas as it is in comparison to fully protected areas. So we have managed to build a database of 49 case studies that kind of fulfilled our criteria. And most of these, so we had 49 case studies that basically looked at some kind of targeted fish species inside a single partially protected area and outside that partially protected area. Then once we had this database, we have classified each partially protected area based on these regulation-based classification systems that takes into account all sorts of activities within the partially protected area, such as fishing activities, recreational activities, bottom exploitation activities, and so on. So once, so we have classified these partially protected areas, and then we have looked at the biological responses of each of these areas.
You mentioned that the database led to 26 peer-reviewed research articles, which is absolutely incredible. Do you have like a list of those that we could direct people to?
Sure. It is in one of our appendices.
The supporting information of the paper has all the case studies, the PPA class, location, age, size, implementation capacity, etc. And then the reference for each of which.
So the process of building out this whole database, you mentioned that took the longest. How long did you spend doing all that?
I would say like 3 months for sure.
Wow.
was mainly focused on this.
Wow, that is impressive.
So searching, then, because we found much more papers that, not much more, but a few more papers that talked about partially protected areas, but some of them like didn't have the control, or some of them were talking about a sea urchin and other targeted fish species. So it's not that we were not interested in other organisms, but to be able to do an analysis, we only had to select the targeted fish species. It's, these are the most reported studies. There's not so much data on invertebrates or even on non-targeted fish species. So little overall compared to how many partially protected areas they are, but also our criteria limited a bit what we could take into account.
So why do you think that there seems to be, I guess, a bias in research towards poorly protected areas?
Because they have the the best responses, no? We could say also.
Yeah.
I think there are two things. Well, there are a couple of things here. One is that, as Mirta said, responses are much clearer when you have no take. Yeah. And historically, no take has been compared to outside more often than everything else. Second reason is, I think, because before we had this regulation-based classification, everything was lumped into a category that is diverse, that it was very difficult to extract meaningful information from that category. And so the fact that now we have this regulation-based classification allows you to separate the different types of pressures that you have inside a partial protected area and for the first time start analyzing the ecological effects that you find inside. And finally, I would say that since several of these partial protected areas do not work, and we show that in our meta-analysis, they don't show benefits, it's much more difficult to publish negative results than to publish information that responds to the pressures. And so I think these different factors all contribute to the fact that it's difficult to have a global database that has lots of cases that we can analyze. And finally, I would also say that many times it's very important to pass the message that it's critical to report everything and not just section of what you're analyzing, because since our criteria, we needed for the analysis to have, you know, all these all this information inside the different case studies. Sometimes some studies report one metric, for instance, but they don't compare that metric with others, or they don't compare the inside with outside, etc. So I think this study also brings to the attention of the scientific community the importance of thinking about the overall benefits of having all the information out.
The publication bias you were speaking of, like, what do you think the community should do to, you know, address these issues in reporting?
I think just as Emmanuel said, is to be aware how important it is to report everything. But then to publish something, it's not, maybe people have tried to put this information out and it just does not go through. So I think it has different kind of levels of what needs to be addressed to overcome this publication bias.
Yeah, I agree. And Nick, there is an important role for the global databases here. Because if the global databases, being the World Protected Area Database of IUCN or the Marine Conservation Institute MPA Atlas, if they associate this type of information to the case studies, to each of the MPAs, even if some of it is not published, but it's somehow validated by a process that could be built inside this community, then we would have much more material to work with and to analyze so that we could be much more effective in passing the message also to managers and to politicians in what needs to be done. So my suggestion would be that the global databases could also function as repositories of information that could then be globally analyzed for the benefit of having this type of data out there.
Definitely. And yeah, and taking into account also other using data from reports and not just focusing on articles that are published. And as Emmanuel said, having a database that allows you to enter information and to use this negative and positive effect would be much better for everyone.
You mentioned in your results that, which was kind of surprising to me, highly regulated MPAs showed about 3 times the fish abundance versus surrounding unprotected areas. But moderately protected ones, it was somewhere between 3 and 4 times as much, which seemed rather interesting. Did you have any hypotheses about why there might be that slight increase with just moderately protected areas?
The thing is, it is a bit higher But as you can see, like from the graphs, the mean is higher, so it's 4 times versus 3. But their variants are kind of overlapping, so it's a variable kind of result. The fact that it's a bit higher, the differences were not different statistically, okay? They were not significantly different between each other. But this could be, for example, we know that we have more moderately regulated areas that have a fully protected area nearby. This could be one of the reasons. However, it could be many other reasons because the papers were from so many different areas. It could be the species that we looked at. It could be the habitat where the MPA were sampled. And in this way, we couldn't find an exact reason why it could be because there's so many variables in this analysis that can affect these results. However, when you do a meta-analysis, the mean response, it's not so important. Like the mean, it's more their variance. This is what affects the overall effect of a marine protected area.
In addition with what Mirta just explained, I would like just to highlight one result that is clear from this analysis that, as well, is that fully protection works much better than partial protection, okay? So when you compare the published information about full protection and the meta-analysis we did, full protection has much higher mean response ratios and mean abundance and biomass. The second message that we can get from this analysis, which was also a surprise to us, is that in the cases where you have moderately regulated areas that are associated with no zones, these areas perform much better, meaning that once you start inserting activities inside protected areas, of course, the results are going to go down. So it's much better to have no take than to have even moderate or lightly take. These areas have significant differences. But if you play with the design of an MPA with multiple zones and you associate no-take areas with areas where, let's say, moderate extraction of resources, local fisheries, etc., is being done, you can still have some ecological benefits. And this is also an important message because, you know, most of the MPAs globally are multi-zoning and multi-use. And so the fact that you can show this connection between spatially associated areas where no-take associated with areas where you have extraction, these areas perform better than when they are alone, also is an interesting result for this analysis that need to be confirmed in future studies.
So what's next for your research into this topic?
Well, that's a good question. I would say that it would be very important to evaluate globally how this regulation-based classification is, what classes of areas are out there, and how effective are the different measures of protection. Because we know that this is just based on the regulations, which tells you that there are a number of other factors that can affect the results. Here on this analysis, we show that the regulations are associated with the results, which is good because there are lots of factors that can influence this. What I would like to see is, again, in these global databases, if you can come up with using these classes that we have and separating the, you know, the areas which are highly regulated from the areas which are moderately regulated or from the areas which are very weakly regulated. And then using this as a framework, not only for assessing the results, but also for the designs of new areas, I think this would be a very important tool to advise managers and advise governments on how to get the best solutions for each case, which, because we know that each case is a case and each governance scheme is what is a different one from country to country. But if you have this framework where against which you can assess your solution, then you have a tool to advise you on what should you expect if you design an area in a certain way, or you should not expect if you, for instance, put too much stuff inside. Exactly. So having the tool practically used, let's say, by managers and by governments, I think would be a very interesting outcome from our point of view.
Just to add, as Emmanuel said, I think this study was very important because we showed that partially protected areas can work, but not all of them can work. And now it's important to know how many, which ones are getting implemented, what are they doing, are they really working? Because we know that more and more partially protected areas are being implemented, and many of them are this weekly or even less regulated than the weekly regulated. So I think it's it was important to separate this, and there's a lot of basis to work on to see actually how this implies in the real world, in any governance scheme and so on.
Yes, you know, one direct conclusion from this analysis is that the weekly regulated areas should not be called protected. This is quite clear because they don't produce results. So you're saying that you're protecting something. So you're passing a message to society that something is being protected, where you can show from this analysis that there is no effect. And so this is something that needs to be incorporated in the policy.
Thank you for listening to this special Markhive summary episode of the Octopod podcast. For more information on the Markhive Ocean Conservation and Climate Change Research Archive, please visit the Markhive repository at markhive.org. That's markhive.org. Documentation for the Markhive project, including a handy list of self-archiving policies for many popular journals, may be found at markhiveinfo.org. Our intro music is Driven to Success by Scott Holmes, and our outro music is Seeing the Future by Dexter Britton. Subscribe to Octopod wherever you get podcasts. If you like what you've heard, help others discover us by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Markhive and Octopod are brought to you by Octo, accelerating ocean conservation by connecting ocean professionals to the knowledge and networks they need. Learn more and help support our work by making a tax-deductible donation at www.octogroup.org. Special thanks to the David and Lucille Packard Foundation for supporting Markhive, and thank you to everyone who has helped us along the way. Until next time,